Oh, today is January 14th, and I'm Molly Kellogg, and this is the roundtable call on nutrition counseling. A few people are still joining us. We have, I've lost track, maybe almost 30 people on the call at this point. And particularly for those of you who haven't been on these calls before, I hold them every several months, and I do call them roundtables because they're an informal gathering. They're not a structured seminar where I'm lecturing or anything like that. The overall topic of conversation is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting. I suspect most of you on the call, almost all of you, will be dietitians, so there may be a few others, and that's cool too. The topic is the counseling process, not the content of what we're talking to them about, but how it is we interact with our patients, our clients, or groups in order to help them move toward a healthier relationship with food and eating. So what we'll do is I just open it up. You can chime in. And when you do, give your name, at least your first name, and where you are geographically, because we're all over the place. And if it's relevant, briefly what population you work with. And then it's fun when you can chime in with successes, maybe some of the counseling tips that you've been reading and how you've used them and how they work for you, what happens when you use motivational interviewing skills or any other skills you've been picking out. The other thing that it's fun to use these calls for is to share resources. Training opportunities you've heard about, books, videos, social media that's helpful, anything. And you can also ask for input and suggestions with any struggles you're having. This is not a setting where I'm going to be able to give explicit case consultation per se. And I will direct a lot of the questions or asking for input back to the rest of you to see what you have to say. So, having said all that, I hope that's relatively clear. Does anybody have any questions first about this process? Okay.
Hi, this is Jan.
Jan?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. Hi. Can you say again how to mute it?
Oh, sure. In order to mute your phone, if you don't have a mute right on your phone, 4-star. And then
number
if you 4-star again, then it will unmute it so that you can speak and we'll hear you.
Okay, great. But mute on the phone will work as well?
Yes, that should work too. And and that's particularly useful if there's a lot of noise in your space. So, who would like to jump in?
Hi, my name's Laura Estan. And
hello, Laura.
Hi. I'm from New England, predominantly Connecticut, Rhode Island, and South Shore of Boston area. I actually am going back into private practice after almost 10 years working in dialysis and long-term care again. I had a private practice before we became eligible for MNT, right before, actually. In fact, I think I closed my private practice not quite a year before MMT was approved by Medicare. I had daughters going into college and felt that I needed to get a regular paycheck to put them through school. So now that they're done with school, I'm going back into private practice. Things are very, very different. And I'm doing a lot of research and have invested in Marianne Hodorowicz's resources on MMT and reimbursement and all that. Mm-hmm. But what I'm curious about hearing from this group is I have a lot of training in motivational counseling, and so my questions aren't really in the counseling process because I've been working with diabetics in renal failure for 6 years, and they're some of the clients to work with. But If there's anyone on the call who has some information, resources, or tips for me on, or even wants to offer themselves as a resource for being new in private practice, is really the general question that I have.
Mm. And Laura, when you say new in private practice, and you say it's not the motivational interviewing skills, and it's not the reimbursement issues per se, or the content of nutrition and MNT, are you talking about more of the practical kinds of things like, I don't know, how to set up an office and?
Well, yeah, more in some of the, you know, the challenges that we face as, you know, being self-employed, recruiting, you know, marketing. One of my big questions right now, I guess, would be around the concept of marketing services and obtaining clients on referral, you know, whether people have found directly working with specific doctor's offices or certain types of advertising, that type of thing. And I'm not really sure whether that question is really pertinent to this group. I'm not certain because I thought that would be a topic like of the call.
Right.
You know,
well,
that's
a topic that has come up with this kind of group occasionally, and I wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because there may be some people on this call who aren't in private practice. And yet, I certainly let's put it out there. Who has? I'll mention one resource, and then we'll see what everyone else has to say. A few years ago, Jessica Setnick did a webinar on getting clients.
Could you spell her last name?
Setnick, S-E-T-N-I-C-K, Setnick,
okay,
Jessica Setnick. And her website is understandingnutrition.com. And you can go and download that webinar, and it's really worth it. It's a very pointed, practical take on how to get it. Clients, how to do marketing for a private practice. Who else has ideas for Laura about that?
Hi, I don't know if, can you hear me?
Sure, yes.
Yeah, hi, my name is Wendy Ellis, and I'm in the Milwaukee area. One idea that I have for, I don't recall your name.
Laura,
that's what I thought. other dietitians have found some success with health profs, which I believe is through Psychology Today. I think you can sign up, kind of develop your own kind of marketing piece for this particular site. And Psychology Today. And then people can look for you on the site. And other dietitians have indicated that they do get a number of clients through it. And you can just kind of poke around and see how other dietitians have marketed themselves on it. And I believe the first 6 months is free.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Molly,
anyone
else? I don't know if you have a feeling about health preps. Do you have any experience with it at all?
I don't. As some of you may know, I am a psychotherapist in addition to being a dietitian, and so I talk with a lot of other therapists, and those who are looking for clients find the Psychology Today site is the best place to do that listing. And so if what you're saying is health profs is underneath that or associated with it.
Yes, it is.
It very well might be a good central location for that.
Okay.
That's the only thing I have to add.
That's actually a great, fantastic recommendation for me because my actual physical site office is I am the only dietitian in a wellness professional practice group that's all psychotherapists.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you can get referrals from them.
That's why they brought me in. But it's funny that the first recommendation be that site. I have an old one on there from my old private practice. So it sounds familiar to me. But that's an excellent idea. Thank you so much.
Sure. Any other ideas for Laura? Okay, well, let's open it up to any other people who want to share excitements or fun or struggles or...
Well, if you don't mind, I hope I'm not usurping. It's Wendy Ellis again.
Sure. Uh-huh.
I actually have a client. This is a specific question, but I just thought I would put out kind of the background of this particular client, and I might be interested in your input, Molly. I have a client who is just about a shut-in person, a woman in her early 40s, who was on a tenure track as a professor and developed several autoimmune illnesses, Sjogren's, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly,
mm-hmm.
Fibromyalgia, and in addition has always struggled with morbid obesity and went on a journey of health at every size. And in doing so, and now is 500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not blaming health at every size. It's just that she said that her weight has been gradually increasing and increasing.
Mm-hmm.
She fortunately has parents who are very supportive, and I actually go into the home and work with her. One of her questions for me is a recommendation for slow, really easy. I mean, she can practically do not very much for herself at all. She's on a newer medication called Savella. And so her energy is increasing a bit. And now, I mean, this is like a huge leap for her that she's even asking me for some recipes for slow cooker. I don't know if anybody has a really good book recommendation or a website recommendation or any recommendations.
Yeah, this is a little off our topic as well.
Okay.
We could just take a moment, though, if you're looking specifically for slow cooker ideas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any resources specifically for that?
And actually for you, Molly, or for anybody else, in terms of working with a client like this, you know, she has a therapist, a very good therapist. She and I have communicated a little bit. So I can't really do the nutrition therapy piece as much because she'll say to me, well, I have a therapist.
Oh, have you this of course is something that a lot of us do deal with, that someone has a therapist and where are the edges of what we do and what they do. Have you talked with the therapist?
I have briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And what the therapist actually said was that the client was confusing a health at every size approach with chaos. So in other words, she was using it.
Yeah. Permission to just do whatever I want. Right.
Yeah. And was also confusing it with, you know, health at every size doesn't allow for weight loss.
Mm.
Which it does. I mean, there's no reason why you can't lose weight if you're eating healthfully and using a health at every size approach. Anyhow, does that kind of fit more into what we're talking about today?
Well,
I'm kind of confused what to do with her as a nutritionist.
Yeah. Well, and if you're feeling that, and this would be true for anybody, where it's, you know, a multi-problem case, as some social workers call it, and often there's more than one person working with this person.
Yeah,
makes sense to have a team, and to really be a team as much as possible, which can mean really a little more frequent talking with a therapist, if a therapist is willing to.
It
sounds like she is.
Yeah.
Talking it out. I'll tell you, Wendy, I have run into this often where a client will say, oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. I'll talk about that with my therapist. And when I bring it up with the therapist, they'll say, oh, well, we could talk about that, but she and I have an awful lot more we can work on. Other things. And, you know, if you guys could actually work on that, you know, whether it's, you know, irrational thoughts about food or, you know, like an OCD kind of person or something, and the therapist will say to me, you know, this client sounds like she's avoiding that with you and using it as an excuse, avoiding something uncomfortable. I will mention,
totally
by the way,
sense.
That even though I'm a therapist, I work with someone in a team, like with an eating disorder, I'm the dietitian on the team. I'm not the therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm used to working in that role and sorting out who does what. So, Wendy, I'm sorry I jumped in.
No, that was really helpful, actually. That was really helpful to me.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with saying to the therapist, you know, this is what the client says about that. And I feel like I could help her a little in this if you think it's okay and I'm not stepping on your toes.
Right. Love that. Very helpful.
Yeah. Most therapists will say, go for it. You know, she needs all the help she can, you know, or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
When I talk to the therapist, is she, I mean, like, that's using her time, but is that just part of the process of her being a therapist? Because she obviously can't bill for that, and I'm using her time.
And you're taking your time as well.
Well, I'm taking my, yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's a very explicit question. Is that part of, you know, your time, even though you can't bill for it? And my answer to that would be yes. I'd like to have some more people chime in as well, partly because I work with eating disorders so much. It's like it's just accepted that that's part of what we spend our time doing. It can be quite annoying, but if you play telephone tag with a therapist, you know, but to spend that much time. But I'd love to hear others, you know, thoughts, input about this finding the role boundary and talking.
This is Beth. I'm sorry. This is Beth from Tampa. And I was just wondering what she really wants from you, like if she doesn't really want to talk about the nutrition or she's – I mean, I was just wondering. I know you mentioned the slow cooker and do you – it sounds like you're a little frustrated that
– Yeah. And I have to be honest with you. I mean, I probably spent the first four or five sessions just hearing her story and really try to get a sense of what she wanted from me. And I'm just – that's still evolving. And I'm not sure she knows, but her therapist told her she should have a dietitian on her team. She did ask me about, you know, portion sizes. I think she's being coached a little bit by her therapist. And, you know, so now she's asking – because, you know, obviously – I'm not going to just put it on her, you know, and just come in and go, okay, we're going to talk. I need to know from her, you know, what it is that she really needs from me. And so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But so she did come up with portion sizes and hunger, you know, hunger and fullness cues and things of that sort. And I've kept it a little, you know, I've definitely been loose just because it's such a, it's just a really tricky situation.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I suppose I could I have a feeling that if I went in and just said, you know, what is it exactly that you're looking for me? What is it that you're looking for? You know, what are your goals with me? She's going to be kind of dumbfounded because I'm not sure she knows. And so
And that's okay to not know. You know, or not have a clear idea. And you too can acknowledge that.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay.
Yeah. And acknowledge that somebody has told her she ought to and ought to have a dietitian, and then say, well, what do you think? Do you think it's generally a good idea? You and she together can sort of sort out how you're going to help her. And Beth's question is right on target at particular moments, saying, what is it you particularly need and want from me right now? Any other thoughts for Laura about that? Or? Okay. What other topics have we got then? And remember, if you've muted, a bunch of people have muted themselves, you can unmute either on your own phone, if that's how you did it, or you can do 4-star, and that will unmute you and you can speak.
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
My name is Erin. I am a dietitian in Seattle, and I went to your training last year. No, a couple years ago.
Oh, great. Hi.
So my question is about supporting other dietitians. I supervise 9 dietitians in a community health setting, and a bunch of them are brand new dietitians, and then other ones have been working for a number of years, but are just getting into the motivational interviewing side of counseling. So my question is how to support my dietitians when I feel, I hear them when they're, you know, they vent to me about patients, and when I hear them feeling very frustrated by their patients, or where their patients will say, like, oh, just give me a diet plan. You're not just going to give me a diet plan and I can just follow that. And the diet, and my staff says, gosh, lady, they don't actually say that, but when they're talking to me, that's kind of the feeling that I have. And I want to affirm them, but also be like, okay, but you can't have that. You can't have that. So I'm wondering what advice you have for that.
Yeah, for particularly when your staff brings to you their toughest situations.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit more, Erin, about what have you already figured out that works in those situations?
That's a good question. Usually I try to figure out which motivational interviewing technique can help in that certain situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my best to demonstrate the good techniques when I'm talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually go to your website and find a tip.
Okay.
And then I say, oh, let me look on Molly's website and see if I can find a tip that kind of describes this technique a little bit more, and you can read about it, and then let me know what you think.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you do have a process, essentially, already for doing that.
Well,
you think in your head about what you know that might fit, and you offer that resource. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. And sounds great to me. What you may have noticed that's the beginning of the elicit, provide, elicit. Remember that little format for providing advice? I elicited from you what you already do and know already. And what, Erin, is there, I mean, that sounds like a great system, and I'm presuming it's not working 100%, and that's why you asked this question. What is it, do you think, what type of thing would be helpful for me right now?
So the thing that I'm, so the specific example that I'm thinking of is when my, one of the dietitians had a patient, where the patient got frustrated that the RD didn't just give her a diet plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was after the RD spent an hour with her, in an initial consult, talking about all these things that they could do. And then at the end, she was like, oh, you're not just going to give me a diet plan. And when the RD was sharing this story with me, you could tell that she was frustrated. And so I had a hard time not just saying, like, well, you can't just, I know it's frustrating, but you can't have that, like, I don't know what the word is, that the RD, that feeling when you don't sympathize with your patients, basically.
Oh, yeah.
I had a difficult time.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I had a difficult time coaching her in that because I was having that same feeling. The feeling that she was having with her patient,
exactly,
I was feeling it about her.
And there is a term for that in social work that's called parallel process, where there's a parallel process going on. And there could be a parallel process then with you bringing it with me, though I'm not feeling that. And so thank God we don't have another level of it. So tell me if I've got this right, Erin, that for the most part, what you do is end up sort of demonstrating, doing with your supervisees what you think they ought to do with their patients, and that helps to a certain extent. And when you're stuck in the same situation, it's hard for you to do that. And I do have a few thoughts. How about I just put them out, and I'd love to hear from other people too. That one of the things you're talking about here is, for one thing, sounds like a doorknob question, right? I mean, it's a client who says right at the end, give me a food plan. And there's no time for it, right? So you certainly, I did write a tip on doorknob questions, and so you could go back and find that one. The other thought that comes to my mind is there, you may get a little mileage from really just empathizing with your supervisee first, empathizing and, you know, normalizing. And guys, we've all been in this situation, and it really is tough when you feel like we've done a good counseling process, and then all of a sudden somebody just wants to be handed a food plan. We know how frustrating that is. Simply normalizing it. Now, I gave a couple ideas. Erin, how are we doing?
Those are great. I'm taking so many notes.
Okay. Who else has ideas for Erin about when you're supervising someone? I bet we have some other supervisors on the call. And you get a supervisee who's really annoyed and challenged.
I'm Wendy Ellis again. I'm just going to throw this out. I'm just wondering if it's okay to indicate to the person that you're supervising that, is it okay to give them a suggestion like, you know, I've been in that position, and it is really, you know, just like you said, Molly, empathizing.
Empathize.
And what I tend to do is have, you know, I'll have with me just some kind of standard, real turnkey meal plans, because people are still wanting something concrete, and it just makes them feel secure. And so I will have something that would be appropriate for, you know, the general audience that I could leave behind with them in the event that this comes up from time to time.
Erin, what's your response to that?
Oh, that's tricky. I can't believe how often I get this question, you know, more often than anything. I had a care coordinator yesterday say, like, well, don't you just give people diet plans? And so my explanation to everyone is like, well, I can give you this, but you might not like Brussels sprouts, and I have Brussels sprouts on here, so it's just not that simple. And then you can only follow this for so long, and it's not a sustainable thing. What works better in my experience, and what research has shown to work better, is that if we work together to come up with something. So next time, if they would ask that at the end, I'd say something like, it sounds like next time we can work together and come up with something that would work for you, as opposed to me just handing you a piece of paper. But I can totally see where, I forgot your name, whoever just spoke.
Wendy.
Yes, yeah. Wendy. I can totally see why you would want to have something just to say like, oh, yeah, you asked about that. Here you go. Let's talk about it more next time. You know, that's
a very tempting
thing to have.
Yeah, and you know, there are pros and cons of both ways of doing it. It has to do with your style. And Erin, I think I'm hearing from you a desire to stay with some beliefs you have about how real change happens. And a lot of clients and care coordinators and doctors and nurses don't think in those terms.
Right.
They think education, hand them the food plan, hand them the foods not to eat, you know, that kind of thing. And we know that rarely, if ever, goes very far. And a lot of what this comes down to, Erin, is that it was a doorknob question. And so if it really was, I mean, literally, you know, there's 30 seconds left and there's another client waiting, you know, That's really the definition of a doorknob question. You unfortunately don't have time to go through what you might with someone, like exploring, oh, have you had experience with food plans before? Tell me what happened, you know, which would be ideal. You know,
right.
I, obviously the person would say, well, I followed it for a while. And and then you get to say, yeah, that's been my experience too. That's why I tend to believe in working this way, step by step, and making concrete changes, or whatever way you would put it, Erin. Any other ideas that people have for her?
Oh, this is Beth from Tampa. I was just wondering, maybe just like basic dietary guidelines, just more fiber, you know, just vegetables, you know, just things that you can just sort of hand them with, just a general, you know, things about if it's diabetes related, carbohydrate, basic, you know, just something.
What you're saying is something to hand them, but that it's not a food plan. Person.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
really
what I
think of that one. Yeah. Yeah, to have something. When sometimes people feel like they want to have something in their hand to go home.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Annie from Charlotte. I have another idea for you.
Sure.
In terms of like supervising that person, I'm wondering if perhaps the RD didn't quite set an expectation for like what that session was going to be. So perhaps at the end of the session, the client thought they were getting one thing and the RD thought they were providing another. So perhaps like asking about, you know, starting at the beginning of the session to say, to make sure that that client, you know, kind of opening that up at the beginning, like, is there something specific you're expecting to leave with so that they don't get quite stuck with that at the very end of the session.
How's that sound, Erin?
Yeah. That's great. We have our monthly calls, and we do one of your tips every, or usually, you know, we focus on one MI technique every month, and we all go practice it and then come back and talk about how it went. And so I'm gathering ideas, and I think like doorknob questions and then setting up a section, introducing the session would be a good one to do.
Sort of the agenda setting part.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember in MI, I don't know, we have various people on the call, and I'm not sure how much experience you have with MI, but the one of the most important steps in MI is focusing. And that's when one, after engagement and finding out about the client and where they seem to be and what they want, focusing on a particular change. And that also essentially means focusing on how you two are going to go about it. Finding out what the person needs in order to get from point A to point B, or more specifically, how to make the next step toward that. And if somebody says, I know myself, and in order to make changes, I at first need to know exactly what I'm going to eat each meal. I need a food plan. Well, then you know it a little earlier on. So sort of figuring out how to put that step in earlier. It's a good point, Annie.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Anything else for Erin? And I want to point out to everyone that notice what Erin is doing. You're expecting your supervisees to be slowly, step by step, picking up skills. You sort of pick one thing every month, and you go step by step and ask people to practice them and come back. And that's how we best learn. And, of course, that's how our clients best make changes, too, step by step. That's a whole other story.
The hard part is,
enough, Erin?
Being patient. Like, I believe that in theory, but then when it comes down to it, I'm like, why don't you just do it?
Right, right.
It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard. Yeah, yeah. You know, actually, I'll toss in something else, Erin. I've had more experience recently working with WIC programs and doing more training of supervisory staff who go out and do observations. Mm-hmm. And particularly within WIC, there may be some WIC people on the call. There is observation of WIC sessions that is about, you know, making sure the WIC counselor, you know, checks all the boxes and says all the right things and is giving best practices as understood by WIC and, you know, those kind of performance evaluation type of things. And unfortunately, that's mostly what these observations have been in the past, and I've been having to work with the supervisors to maybe even have completely separate observations that are designed to help the counselor, not to evaluate them, so that it is not performance evaluation. It won't show up on their, you know, in their files or anything. It's simply, I'm here to help you. I'm here to notice, we can notice together how this session goes and how you might tweak things to make it more easy on you and more effective for the WIC parent. And it sounds like, Erin, you primarily already have that kind of situation where they expect that you're helping them. Am I right?
The dietitians?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they don't feel like you're judging them. And
yeah, especially if it's – if I do also do observations, and that gets a little trickier. As far as them not feeling judged, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially when it's, you know, I impose the observations on them.
Right.
But when they, when I do, you know, when I have like regular check-ins with them and they bring up a question about a difficult patient, then it's 100% just me being supportive.
Yeah, yeah. And they've brought it up because they care about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can reinforce that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Well, that was interesting. Who else has something they would like to bring up?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Stephanie. I'm from the Central Illinois area, and I'm actually still an undergrad. I'm a senior, and I'm going through the internship application process right now. But I'm hoping to attend Ohio State, the internship application process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to attend Ohio State because they have the personalized nutrition counseling emphasis. But my question is, though, as far as advanced degrees and master's degrees, to be successful in motivational interviewing, what are some advanced degrees, like master's degrees, that some of you have?
Oh, good question. Is there anyone else on the call besides me who has another degree in psychology or social work or something like that?
Hi, this is Laura Stonigan from New England. I don't have a completed master's degree in counseling, but I actually went halfway through. I was actually teaching public school and started working on my master's in education and then left teaching public school and found a self-designed master's degree program through Lesley University where I was able to combine the three areas that I felt I needed additional graduate work that would actually be an advantage for me as a dietitian, and it was a combination of healthcare management, counseling psychology, because they have a social work program there, and holistic nutrition. So more in mind body and energy work and things like that. And it was a self-designed major, and it was extremely helpful, especially the counseling classes that I took. I would have to say that those were probably, other than some of the educational technique graduate classes that I've taken, the classes that were part of the social work department and counseling and counseling practices were phenomenal. They were some of the best classes I've ever taken, and it would have been a self-designed master's degree in Healthcare Administration Counseling and Education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, that's
cool.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of schools up here in the New England area that are doing more self-designed master's degree programs that actually combine education, healthcare, and counseling, because it's become a really unique. So, ironically, it's a unique combination of classes. Yet at the same time, it's very popular, especially in an area so dense as New England for education, you know, and healthcare.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice combination. I mean, I would love to have become a licensed therapist, and I had looked into that, but the amount of work that would have been involved in me doing another practicum on top of what I'd already done as registered dietitian, and I had young children, was very overwhelming. And so this was what they had suggested. And it ended up, I think, ultimately being much more beneficial because I still work in healthcare, and it gave me the healthcare management and healthcare administration updates that were going on with the changes in the healthcare system. And, of course, right now with healthcare reform, that would be an even more applicable and beneficial type of coursework to do. In fact, I even think Tufts University has a program like that where And you'd have access to their nutrition programs as well as the mm-hmm. Department of Social Work and the Department of Education.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank
cool.
you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the one college I'm aware of that has a master's and dietetic internship, master's in counseling psychology and nutrition master's all combined, and is there an internship there, too? I'm not sure. It's Bastyr, which is in Seattle.
Okay.
In Seattle. you know about them. Now, the other thing you can do, Stephanie, is email me when we get off the call, because there's a informal networking group of those of us who are dietitians and also licensed mental health professionals of some sort. There are 30 of us or something. There are more and more of us in that category. And we've come up with a frequently asked questions sheet, which I could email to you.
Okay.
I'd say anybody else on the call who would be interested in that, I'd be glad to email it to you.
All right.
Matter of fact, I should probably put it up on my site somewhere so people have access to it.
I was just going to say, well, could you just repeat the resource again?
The what the resource is?
Yeah, just so I can write it down. I didn't write it down this much. I'm sorry.
The name of it is Questions Frequently Asked About Nutrition and Mental Health Degrees. And just email me and I'll send it to you. It's just a several page little frequently asked questions that we all put together because we often get asked this. And the basic question to ask yourself about whether you want to go for an advanced degree is, do I want to be the best dietitian and nutrition counselor that I can be, or do I actually want to be a psychotherapist in addition to being a dietitian? Of course, if you want to be a psychotherapist, then it makes sense to go through getting the degree and the fairly extensive supervised practice. In most states, it's 2,000 hours of supervised practice before
okay.
you can sit for a clinical social work license, for example. But if you don't need to, don't actually want to be a therapist, then there are loads of other things you can do, such as what I think it was Laura was saying she's done. Or you could take a whole bunch of workshops, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other ideas for Stephanie?
Because I've also just kind of been on the fence. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, just another idea. Yeah, the workshops, Molly's workshop was great, the motivational interviewing, or like a coaching program. I'm a certified mm-hmm. wellness coach, and I went to
the Well Coaches
and
school.
Yeah, so it just gives you coaching experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You had something else, Stephanie?
I was just going to say actually, I forgot what I was going to say. I have experience counseling because we have an on-campus clinic at my university, so I already have motivational interviewing counseling experience with staff and students. But I'm kind of on the fence as I am applying to internships. Rather, I should go directly for that internship master's combined, or if I should do that internship first and then maybe go back for my master's. Or I'm on the fence about that, so I was kind of just wondering if any dietitians have done one or the other, and advantages or disadvantages of either, maybe.
I did it so long ago, you shouldn't ask me. Who has input about whether, you know, which direction she ought to go?
I'll speak to that a little bit. This is Erin again in Seattle. I will mention you mentioned Bastyr, and they do have an internship as well.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I was looking at that, actually. I have my applicant guide pulled up, too.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, personally, I did undergrad, and then I did the internship, and then I worked as a dietitian for about 5 years, and now this year I'm going back to get my master's.
Okay.
And I think I'll bring a lot to when I'm studying for my master's. I'll bring a lot from all of the experience that I have from being all the experience. Sorry, not to minimize all the other experience that everyone else has. That's a lot more than just 5 years. But I think I'm going to have a different experience going in now as opposed to if I had gone straight to my master's from undergrad, just being able to have that real life experience. But that was,
that makes sense.
Worked personally for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other input for Stephanie? Okay, well, Stephanie, good luck as you're getting started on your career.
Thank you.
Exciting time in your life. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we have a few more minutes. Who else would like to jump in?
Hi, this is Joyce. I work in an outpatient setting. Can you hear me okay?
Sure. Yep.
So the thing that comes up for me time and time again is somebody may come in and say that they want to work on something. They set some goals, and I try to be good about having them come up with those goals.
Mm-hmm.
But even doing that, often they come back and they haven't done what they set out to do. What would be your kind of general approach to that scenario?
When someone comes back and it, you're saying it, you thought they agreed to do something,
mm-hmm.
and they were planning to do it, and then it just didn't happen?
Yes.
Is that, yeah. That is something I've actually written a tip on, very specifically. Let me see if I can quickly find it. I've written 140 some, so it's a little hard. I have alphabetized. I think it's on there. Change. Clients who aren't making changes.
Mm-hmm.
Tip number 57.
Okay.
I think that's, which would be in volume 3 of the practice workbook that came out recently. If you don't have volume 3 and don't plan to order it, you could email me and ask me to send that chapter to you.
I will check it out.
You do have it. Okay. Okay. So check that out. How do you handle it already? I mean, you must do something when that happens, when people come in like that.
Yeah, I suppose I ask, what's not working about this for you? What's challenging about this for you?
Mm-hmm.
And often, it's things like time management or lack of financial resources, which tend to be really challenging
mm-hmm.
barriers to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a few little thoughts to toss out, Joyce, specifically. How about I toss them out and see where it goes? Is that okay with you?
Great.
Okay. One suggestion would be, before asking your wonderful open-ended questions to bring out the challenges, start with a few open-ended questions to bring out the motivations, the how important it is to them to make this particular change. And it sounds like there's always a very specific change you're talking about here, like
mm-hmm.
bringing their lunch or, you know, joining the gym. Or I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's something fairly specific. So you can say, oh, let's back up a little bit here. Let's take a look at the – now, remind me, what was the reason we were focusing on that? What did you see it doing for you? You know, get them to talk themselves into it a bit more, and then ask for the challenges, because, of course, that will need to come up. But basically backing up a little ways first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What does that sound like?
Yeah. Yeah, I could try that.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, offering a smaller step, you know, saying, might there be a smaller step that would feel more doable for you? And for some reason, Joyce, I think in terms of the – how familiar are you, by the way, with the concepts in MI of importance and confidence to make a change?
I'm familiar with them, and I do try
okay.
to address those – initially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, it could be that the client really thought they were confident in change
mm-hmm.
and they thought it was pretty likely and something came up or,
mm-hmm.
you know, something surprised them. So you can gently, without being judgmental or whatever, of course, back up to the importance and confidence again and maybe more carefully this time scale the confidence. How confident are you, or how much are you confident that in this week, on a scale of 1 to 10, that this will happen?
Mm-hmm.
And often voicing this as it'll happen is
mm-hmm.
a little clearer than confident that you're going to do it, or that you can do it. Because a lot of people misinterpret that as, well, they can do it. You know, they can bring their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're actually going to is another story,
mm-hmm.
you know. So gently exploring challenges, again, sounds like a way to handle it to me, while also keeping an ear out for how much the person is beating themselves up, possibly,
okay.
about not doing it. Because of that, of course, doesn't get them very far.
And what would you say would be some approaches to help somebody increase their confidence?
That's sort of a big one, isn't it? And I probably wrote a tip on it. Hang on a minute. at least one. boosting your client's confidence, tip number 42, which would be in volume 2.
Okay.
That would probably be the one I'm most explicitly would be talking about that.
Great.
Though also, any of the tips that I wrote on the planning process, which tip number 118, which would still be in the archives, I think, on the website. Because essentially what you're doing is it's all part of the planning process to fine-tune the their plan so that it is one that has a confidence of at least about 7,
mm-hmm.
If it's someone who can think in terms of numbers with scaling. Of course, some people just don't do that. They don't like those numbers. But, you know, if their confidence to do it is sort of down at 4 or 5, well, what would have to be different for it to be higher? Maybe breaking it down into a smaller step, or expecting themselves to only do it one day a week as opposed to every day, you know, find out what, and the answer's in them. The answer of what would bring up their confidence is in them. You're simply helping them bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing this?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think what I tend to see are pretty low confidence levels.
Mm-hmm.
And my impression is that that's I tend to have lower socioeconomic clients, and my impression is that they've just never observed some of these things being done in the home, and so I think it's really challenging for them to be confident. Or even, I find that when I'm talking to them about some of these confidence issues, I seem to get stuck because I feel like they've never visualized it, so I'm not sure that they can even come up with the answers on their own.
Right, they're not used to doing that. Mm-hmm. They're not used to observing their process. And I'm aware of the time, and we do need to wind up really soon. These are really good questions, Joyce. And that one gets into sort of how to word things in a more culturally appropriate or socioeconomic level or something appropriateness. And my guess is there is a way to do it. And I wonder if using more straightforward language, like you could play around with it. You probably know your clients better than I do. You know, something like, well, let's see, as you imagine yourself standing in your kitchen, how likely is it that you will reach for that or whatever you're asking to do? And what would make it more likely? May need to take them a little more step by step through it.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry we're out of time, guys. This has been a fun call. A bunch of people participating. We had, I think it looks like almost 40 people
on the call. I'm sorry, I joined you late.
Oh, okay. we did record the call. And,
I forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, we did record it, and I will send out a link to the recording very soon. And I'm glad those of you who did chime in, we got some great discussions going. And do stay in touch, and if there are any follow-up concerns or things you didn't use on the call, do send me an email. And we'll do another one of these in a few months. And I hope to see some of you at my two-day workshop coming up in various cities. Some of you on this call have already been to my workshop. And I'll be in Cincinnati in a few weeks. Their Dietetic Association is having me come in for a day. So maybe I'll see some of you at upcoming trainings. Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Very good. Thank you so much, Molly.
Take care.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you.